Thanks for listening to my sister.
They're like pretty cool and pretty cute.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Elle Army. Welcome to Hippie in the City. This week, we have another amazing guest. Kelly and I are talking to our sister Megan. To be more precise, Dr. Megan Monahan, OBGYN extraordinaire. She is in her residency in St. Louis, and we spend this whole time talking to her about her passions, about medical school, about three people that inspired her, and all the crazy stories in between. And let me tell you, the stories are crazy. Please love Kelly and Ellie. Talk to our sister, Dr. Megan. Okay, so this week on Hippie in the City, we have a fantastic doctor, a resident, female badass. Kelly, you want to finish this out? Finish it out?
Absolutely. She is a queen. She is a dog mother of now two, guys. Two, okay? She is a ginger-haired, supple-bodied, gorgeous woman.
Hi, everybody. I'm so happy to be here. These are my two absolute favorite humans in the whole world, and I love them so much, and they finally let their little sister in on the podcast game.
Oh, my God. Literally could not be more excited to have our favorite guest in the whole wide world be on the podcast.
IRL.
Yeah, in real life. We've been having to do, obviously, since COVID happened, we've been having to do the podcast virtually, whether we have guests or it's just Kelly and I. And that has been amazing. Technology is wonderful, but at the same time, we are extroverts. We are social butterflies, and there's nothing like the energy in the room when you're chatting and hanging out. So we have Megan in Charlotte, Kelly's in Asheville, but we get to have some IRL magic today.
Coming to you from North Carolina.
We're pretty stoked. We're pretty stoked. Okay, so to start this off with a bang, I have a question for you, Megan.
Yes.
Dr. Monahan, as she is now referred to very often, even though we've been calling her that for the past like 6 years, even before she got into medical school, we called her Dr. Monahan. We knew it was going to happen for her. Okay? We are a supportive tribe. Okay.
Manifesting.
Yeah. So the question that I have to start us off is what, since we're going to talk about you being a doctor, because I'm curious about doctor life.
So many medical questions.
She is our personal WebMD. But what is one thing that you wish you had known before you started, like, your actual career as a resident?
As a resident or a medical student?
As a resident.
Okay.
Like, something that you didn't necessarily learn in medical school, you couldn't have prepared yourself for, that you've learned actually being in the trenches of the vaginas, pulling the babies out. Like, what have you learned that is something that you wish you would have known before you started?
Oh, God, that's a really tough question because there's a lot that I didn't know, but also a lot that I don't necessarily think I wish I would have known because you can't really do anything about it. Like, there's a lot of politics involved because you, as a resident, your first year are like bottom of the totem pole. You've got many upper levels above you, attendings, like, then the whole hospital BS involved. So there's a lot of politics. There's also a lot of just like logistics. You're like responsible for notes now and like not fun stuff. But then also you get to do all the surgeries and all the cool stuff that you've been like dying to do for so many years. So something I wish I would have known. I don't know, man. It's tough. But there's a lot I didn't know. The learning curve is steep. at the beginning. And I mean, throughout the whole thing, but really at the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that being, I mean, I feel like with any job I've ever had, I always feel like I could basically prepare myself as much as possible. But the reality of me actually being fully prepared for anything is just like never there. There's like a lot of just like faking it till I make it, or like just being really in tune to listening to what like is going on, and then like being aware of my surroundings and like watching other people who've been there longer and then trying to like somehow simulate the same thing and like hope that that's like the right call. But yeah, I mean, I know for like, you know, just general sake, like it, here in Asheville, our hospital's been dealing with a, like an ownership change, and that's created a lot of politics with like our nurses here locally at the hospital, and then also doctors and stuff like that. So I'm sure there was a lot of different kinds of crazy stuff that goes on at every hospital.
Yeah, you have to, as a resident, cater your working style to your team too, which can be tricky. And I think thankfully that's something, as someone who like spent a couple of years out in the real world before going to medical school, I had a little bit of experience doing, but it can be really, really tricky. Some people are like, that's just not the right answer. That's not how you do things. And there's like a million ways to learn how to do things. So it's a very fun world. There's a lot of moving parts. And I wish that I were like had a camera and I could have you guys be flies on the wall every day.
Oh, I'm there. Trust me, I am there in a second. So another question that's kind of along the same vein, but like, what is a bit of advice that you would give to yourself or to someone else who is trying to pursue a career in medicine? Like, what's something that you learned that's like so valuable now that you use it every day?
Become a bajillionaire. First,
know the vagina in and out.
Yeah, both of those things. I mean, essentially, you need like an investor to get into med school these days. And also, as an OBGYN, helps to know the vagina in and out. At different points, though, different advice. Like when I talk to undergraduates who want to go to medical school, who ask for advice, I tell them that they need to just like shadow. Because when people think of the medical field, they think of doctors and they're like, oh, okay, well, if I
Grey's
like,
Anatomy.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, I want to be the next Meredith Grey, man. I should just go to medical school and become a doctor. And then they realize that that's not the path for them because there's a million different ways to be involved in medicine. Or if you're in medical school, I don't know, advice for you. Just go into whatever field you love. If you're like trying to be cool and go into like ortho because you think you're going to be a bro and make a bunch of money, like you're probably not going to be very happy. If that's your life, if you want to crack bones all day, go crack those bones, buddy.
Yeah, I feel that for sure. I feel like, you know, go with what your heart is telling you to do. That's why Elle and I have been pouring our souls into this podcast.
Yeah, follow your destiny is I feel like the major tagline for Hippie in the City. Like literally,
yeah,
follow your destiny. Where's your heart leading you? How can you better yourself? I think what I've learned from Megan being in medical school is that it's just a socially acceptable form of being a psychopath.
Yeah, she calls me Dexter.
Yeah, it's like being comfortable with, I mean, it's amazing and it's essential, but it's insane how comfortable you have to be with some really scary stuff. And like, you know that when you go see a doctor, you know, growing up and stuff, you think like, okay, this person's a professional and that's the, like, sometimes the only capacity you know them in. And having known Megan her whole life and seen this be her passion, and then she goes to school for it and learns about it and then gets certified to like do this stuff on her own, I'm just like so impressed and amazed and also terrified, because I'm like hearing stuff firsthand. And she's like, yeah, I like cut into this guy's leg and I cauterized it, or I did this and I, you know, did a C-section with twins. And she's like, and you believe the scar that, or the stitching I did, so this woman wouldn't even have a bad scar. She's going to be so happy. And I'm just like sitting here going, wait, can we back it up? You cut like into someone? Like you liked it? You know what I mean? It's like kind of
trips me out now that I'm just so close to her profession, and just it's so apparent how not equipped I would be for this field and how it is absolutely not my destiny to do anything like that.
I feel like I have the like physical capability and like the mental capacity to like cut into people and like be fine with it and sleep like soundly at night. But like, I do not have the drive that it takes to like put myself through medical school.
So you're just a serial killer.
I'm truly Dexter. Like, I think I could get through the like, maybe the like blood spatter specialist part.
Yeah, you really would. You're like, ooh, this is some aggression. This blood painting over here. Ooh, it's quite a spatter. Anger. This was done in.
Yeah, it's like I could make a full Jackson Pollock series with blood and I'd be fine, you know? Like, I'd be fine. I'm, like, excited.
Sometimes I do. After a delivery, you look down at your gown and you have straight up, like, Jackson Pollock all over you. And you're like, that is someone else's insides. Yeah. My eyes are watering.
I wish you guys could see their faces.
But I was going to say, I feel like the other problem you would have a problem with patient confidentiality. You'd be like, Ellen, I have to tell you.
I don't feel like I would. I have kept so many secrets.
Such a sad to think you're just perfect at everything.
No, but I have worked in a situation where I've had to keep things like incredibly confidential in a school setting.
I don't think that you would struggle with confidentiality.
Thank you, Megan.
Would struggle with the occasional patient who was just like not someone you would prefer to take care of. And you'd be like, you know what? No medication for you today.
Stop whining and go home.
You need to build some character on the field hockey field, ma'am. Have a good one. See you. Have a nice day. Okay. Well, I have another question.
Yes, I love it.
So I'm just going to kind of like move away from like you being a doctor and all of that kind of stuff. Because I want to hear just like more about you as a person. Because I don't feel as though careers define who we are. That's something I feel is sort of a toxic American ideal, is that like your career, like the first thing people ask you is like, what do you do? And people always respond with their occupation, not like, oh yeah, like I'm, and like people are, I feel like people who don't have a quote unquote traditional occupation are like ashamed to say or respond to that. And I just don't feel like that's how we should judge who we are. So just in general, I wanted to ask you if we were to talk about like your life as a whole, who are three, we love to do it, we love things in threes, we love a three for three. Who are three people who have been the most influential to you, like for your life?
Wow, really put me on the spot here, Kel. I gotta think of my feet. Ah, okay.
I mean, you're looking at two of them.
I knew that you were gonna. Really quick side note, really do love that you threw in that it's an American thing that we start with our careers, because I agree with that. I don't think.
Next time somebody asks me like, oh, and what do? I'm just going to be like, I knit. I'm pretty good at making grilled chicken. I walk Ruby. I make a mean cup of coffee. And I like to do makeup.
I always say, what do you mean? People are like,
on a Tuesday at noon, or
yeah, what's our time frame here?
Yeah, like, what am I doing right now? Like, are you asking me out? I'm married.
I'm so flattered.
No, but I always ask people what do you mean? Because if you want to ask me about what I have as an occupation, how I make money, I can answer that. But like, what do I do? The answer to that is not what we make it. So anyways,
for sure.
Go ahead, Megan. Continue with your thoughts.
And scene. Got it.
Please.
Okay, three people who've inspired me. Is that the question?
Yeah? Yeah, just like three of the most influential people in your life. And they can be people that you know or people that like are dead. They could be people that you've read about in a book, like a character, whatever.
Okay, hard to narrow it down to three on the spot. And the first person that comes to my mind, it's going to sound so cheesy, but both of you are going to be like, yes, we totally get it, is my / Olivar, for the listeners, Olivar grandmother. Alice Scott.
Snaps for grandma.
Snaps for Alice, yes. Because she's just the most, like, badass boss. Like, the original badass bitch. Yeah. She just, yeah, she went for what she wanted. She was fearless. Like, she raised all of our mothers and kept her sanity. So, like, props to Alice. So smart, so ahead of her times in many ways, like, so open and surprisingly liberal for, like, an Irish immigrant Catholic lady. So yes, I feel like just being raised by that energy, very inspirational. Love it. Never ever was made to feel like opportunities weren't available to me because I was a woman.
Yeah, I feel like our grandmother, just like side note for those of you that don't know, she was born in like 1920? 25. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I've aged her, sorry. But like, her role in a general capacity was supposed to be very much like a homemaker. Like, she was supposed to raise the children and like bake the cakes and like all of that. And she did all of that. But like, also, I think one of the things that I respected about her the most, he would not make business decisions inside his own job or inside their nuclear family without her signing off and saying like, yes, that's it. Or without her saying like, whoa, 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 I have a different idea. And then he would go with her idea because he knew that she was like the mind behind everything. And I think that's really cool.
Intuition.
Yeah.
She had such a fierce Scorpio woman intuition that he was like, she knows. And I'm going to consult my oracle. And that was grandma.
Yeah. Yeah. He trusted the shit out of her and it was great.
Fierce feminist, that woman. I don't know if she'd call herself that, but she was. She raised 5 strong ass women.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So first person is Grandma Alice. Number two?
Number two person that comes to my mind right now is Miss Hammer, which I feel like Ellen is gonna laugh about. She was our 7th and 8th grade science teacher, and this woman made me fall in love with science. I mean, I am a nerd at my core, obviously. I don't think it took too much effort for someone to make me fall in love with science.
She's like, for all of our listeners, Miss Hammer was like if Mrs. Frizzle and Ellen DeGeneres had a baby, but was their fierce older science sister. Like, she literally was so intelligent, so fun. She had this short, like, Princess Diana, Ellen DeGeneres, blonde haircut. But she was so tough because she also, she was tough, that teacher that was tough, because she believed all her students could learn this tough material. Like, she wasn't hard on you just to be hard on you. She was just like, everyone has potential and we're going to crush it.
Yeah, I never thought of that description of her, the Miss Frizzle Ellen DeGeneres thing, but it's so accurate. And if you guys can picture that baby in your head, that's what it is. Wow. Yeah, that's totally accurate. That's how she looks. And she would like push this material on you, but not in like a, I'm going to shove it down your throat way. She's like, this is just so cool and everybody should learn it and you guys are all going to know it. And like, she let us dissect sharks and like really cool stuff that I'm not entirely sure 7th and 8th graders like should do or could do, but we did it because she told us we could do it. And we were like, yeah, we can. And so she made me totally fall in love with science.
Isn't it crazy what a good educator can do? Like, even now, like, almost, you know, at the end of your 20s, you're still thinking about someone who taught you like some, and I don't want to like make it sound remedial, but taught you some more like basics of like biology and anatomy and like science, and that you're still in your mind today like referring to her as someone who is an inspiration. It's like such a cool like full circle moment for teachers. Is like, you are doing God's work out there, sweeties. all of you, men, women, teachers alike, you guys, bless up, especially those who have to teach online right now, like, bless your soul.
It is so true, and I feel like as a teacher, they never know, like, what's going to stick. Like, they're just out there doing their best, trying to, like, put this passion and, like, life into these students, and it doesn't always click with all of them, so that, like, how could you ever know what's really going to hit, you know? And I'm sure that she doesn't know that, like, those words stuck with me so hard. I mean, she knows that I ended up going to medical school, and I kept in touch with her and told her how much that meant to me, so she knows a little bit, I'm sure, but, like, never know. We all remember very specific interactions with our teachers that shaped us in many ways, you know, and it's such a big deal. Way to go, teachers. Keep doing it. You're changing lives.
Oh, and they just make no money. So, like, they're just literally, talk about a passion project and things we need in the world is, like, literally amazing teachers, and they ain't doing it for the pay.
Mm-mm.
So you gotta love them even more.
You really do.
Okay, who's your number three?
Oh my gosh. I have to narrow it down now, guys. This is the last spot. It's like being at recess and you have to fill the last spot, you know? Can't offend anyone.
It's like, it's fine. I mean, I'm going to tell a short story so you can think about this like your third person. But like, seriously, recess story real quick. So one time, you know how like at recess you guys would like pair off and you'd play like recess soccer or like recess football or like whatever. Well, we were playing soccer this day, and I had, this is in fifth grade, and I had a fifth grade boyfriend, Brady. Ugh, what a dreamboat. Anyway, he was, me and this other girl were the two like quote unquote like captains, like getting to pick who was on our team. And I let her have first pick, just being nice. And she chose Brady. And I was like, oh, you did not. And I said something to her and I was like, hey, so I don't know if you know this, but Brady and I are going out. So I'm going to pick him to be on my team. So maybe you can pick someone else. And she was like, no, I think Brady is on my team. And hand to God, this is the only time I've ever punched someone in the face, but I freaking decked her so hard. I do not condone violence, and I wish I had never done this, but it's just kind of funny now. And I decked her in the face, and she fell flat on the ground, and I picked her up by her collar, and I said, if you ever tell on me, I'll hit you again. And that's the most savage thing I've ever done in my life. That's all.
I mean, jaw on the floor over here. I had no idea my whole life that you punched a girl and then picked her up by her collar.
I
knew you were savage, but damn.
Yeah, it was pretty, like, mean. I'm not a mean person, but that was pretty mean. I was pretty mad.
You are a Slytherin, though.
I'm just, like, very, like, lion-hearted when it comes to, like, don't mess with my peoples. Because, like, I will come for you.
Don't say that. This is a threat to anyone listening not to hurt Megan or I.
Or John. Like, don't touch John. This story was about trying to take her man.
Oh, right.
But, like, reality is, like, if you try and hurt one of my people, I will know the exact way to destroy you, even before you know that that's what destroys you.
I believe that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I also believe that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So on that super scary note, I did decide who I would call my third inspiration. I feel like if he knew I were saying this, it would be a total plot twist. His name is Dr. Kevin Potts. He is an ENT in Louisville, Kentucky. Yes, I know, right, guys? So the year before I went to medical school, I got to go on this global health trip to Kenya, and it was amazing and awesome. And I was the only like non-medical person on this trip. I mean, I was going to medical school, but everyone else had a degree of some sort. And don't know how they allowed me to bum along with them, but it was wonderful. And he was on this trip, and We had a great time, and I learned so much from him in a lot of ways, but there was this one moment where we were in the OR, and he was allowing me to work with him and, like, you know, hold instruments, and we're in this woman's neck, and he's allowing me to, like, move muscles and arteries out of the way and stuff, and I felt very cool, obviously, and it was wonderful. But then he put his, like, headlamp on my head, where, like, ENTs use, like, a very nerdy-looking kind of, like, headlamp, and handed me, like, the instruments and was just like, okay, doctor, what do you want to do now? And I have a picture of it that I looked at for many years after while I was trying to get into medical school and going through medical school. And it just always was a very singular moment where someone treated me like the thing I wanted to become before I was that thing. Like, I wanted to become a surgeon so badly, and he treated me that way, even though I hadn't earned the degree yet. I don't know. It was like a very powerful moment. And now I'm like, yes, I can be a surgeon. You've already treated me like one. I know I can be one. And if you think I can be one, then I can spend the time to learn the things I need to learn to become one. And I don't think he has any idea that that moment made such a big impact on me.
That's amazing. And I love that. And I'm so grateful for that moment for you, because that's so incredible. And I think, at least I know for me, I've had experiences like that, both with sports and with career, most recently with career. But, like, it's incredible just what a moment of someone believing in you before you do can, like, do for your confidence, for your self-esteem, and for your drive. Like, if somebody else sees this potential in me to, like, be able to do something, and then I'm just, like, kind of have kept it as, like, a, I really hope I can do that, but, like, I don't know, we'll see. And then, like, if somebody else is like, no, like, you're a boss, you got this, I know you can do it, like, I know that you have all the instincts, you have all the ability, you have all the talent in the world. And then it's like all of a sudden that confidence is like chest out, tits up to the sky, I'm ready. And I think that's really awesome that you have that moment in pursuing your medical career. That's really cool.
This is a callback to our empowerment episode where we talked about Robin and what an inspiration she has been to Kelly in her career, and how long and far encouragement and empowerment goes, like, just in life, not even in the workplace. But and as daunting as it might sound to be like, I see someone's potential, let me light it on fire, like, it's actually a lot more simple to just do it in an everyday, like, in an everyday way that's a little bit more of like a ritual, or just like passing it on. Because, like, basically what I'm taking away from what you said is not necessarily what it gave you, but that these people don't even know probably that they impacted you that much. And so it just goes to show that everything we do in our lives and everybody we touch, we never know if that's going to be a singular moment in their life. So you need to try to be as positive and encouraging and kind as you can be, like, in every moment that you can. Or even if you're having a tough moment, frustrating, shit's going wrong, have, like, a self-aware, you know, jolt in that moment and go, okay, like, how can I take a deep breath, repackage this, and then pass on the best version of myself? Because you never know how many future doctors are out there that you could be empowering with a headlamp.
It's true. I think we all need to be more generous with our words of empowerment too, because I think a lot of us hold them as if there's a finite number that we can give out, you know, or like if you give your stamp of approval to someone for something and then they don't follow through, or they don't, that somehow it means less of you or your opinion of someone. But it's like, give out those words of encouragement, because they take people so far and people lean on them in their times of self-doubt. And you never know who you're going to impact or how far it's going to go.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of self-doubt, just thought of something else, but I have to ask. Because, you know, no success, no mountain comes without some valleys. So what for you, like throughout life, and this doesn't have to be career related, this can be just like in general, what is like, would you describe as one of the biggest failures? And why do you think it was such a failure? And then how have you not necessarily overcome that, but how have you moved on from that or accepted it or maybe not, like wherever you're at with it?
Or how have you used it to propel you into something beautiful and useful? You know, failures.
Yeah, and like literally can be anything.
Well, there's a lot to choose from. The first one that comes to my mind is not getting into medical school the first time I applied, which at the time felt truly and utterly devastating. Because you work so hard and spend so much time and money. And also any time that you're doing something in life that like everybody knows you're working towards and it doesn't work out is really awkward. And feels, I think, like a bigger failure too, because everyone asks you about it and you have to be like, no. But looking back, it was so awesome because it gave me this opportunity to move out to California, which was just like a fun new adventure and getting out of my own comfort zone. I got to live with my sister, which was so wonderful and amazing.
Which one for our listeners, which sister are you referring to?
She got to move in with Elle, me. And honestly, I swear that was the universe giving her to me. I think the universe, God, Allah, goddess, moon and stars, whatever you call it, that force, I knew I was in such a low place in my life that like it didn't let her get into medical school because I needed my sister. You know what I mean? So it's like it might have been a failure to you, but it was a blessing to me.
It was a blessing to me too. I just didn't realize it at the time. But now, I mean, I worked hard at that time in my job. I ended up working in a medical office, but I worked hard to get then like into medical school, but I think it also made me so much more grateful for it once I was in all of the really hard moments that you face, and you face a lot of self-doubt moments when you're in medical school. And I think they're really important because I think each time you face them and then you come to the conclusion of like, no, I actually do want to do this. I do want to be a doctor. It like really solidifies everything even more because there's a lot of sacrifices to becoming a physician time-wise and like energy, and you just have to move for your career for residency and stuff. So I think those are self-doubt moments are really important, and I've been really glad that I have all of them. And so I think those moments of like failure of not getting in made me appreciate those moments and not be like, oh, what if I didn't have to work really hard for this thing? Would I still want to be here? And then I also think that it's made me realize that even if all of your goals and dreams don't work out or don't work out the first time, that life still goes on and you can still be an amazing person on a different path. Because I saw a lot of my classmates stress about each little task that we had to complete in medical school as if it was the end of the world. And I was like, you know, this is important. I need to learn what I need to learn from this task, but it's definitely not the end of the world. Life will go on.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if only we had, you know, like our hindsight, I guess, be able to be our foresight and we could be like, oh man, I'm going to get through this. I'm going to be just fine. I'm going to get in, like I'll be good. And, you know, I'm really envious of people who have that, like, just like never ending optimism about things. Like they just feel like it's gonna work out. It has nothing to do with them being optimistic about their future and like not wanting them to like achieve whatever it is they're out to achieve. It's just that like my insides are like well, you gave up on this, or you didn't believe in yourself to do this, or, you know, I didn't get into medical school the first time, but I got in the second time and I just delivered you, so you can do anything, honey.
Yeah, that is some next generation foresight, Kelly. I'm going to deliver these babies and tell them this story. I'm going to start doing that now.
Mm-hmm. I think it's like a powerful message for a baby. I don't know. Okay, sorry. I'm just like, I'm like on my Joe Rogan shit right now. Like, take me off this pedestal.
You're going to be just fine.
I also have a question. I'm just going to start raising my hand like I did last episode. What made you decide to specialize in being an OBGYN? Which, I'm not going to pronounce it correctly, or I'm going to try. It's two different specialties, technically. It's obstetrics and gynecology.
Crushed it.
Oh!
Crushed it, yeah.
Yes, queen! She's a medical school girl.
You are serving me very JVN vibes tonight, and I am here for it.
Yes. And what kind of vibes am I serving you?
Anthony.
Oh, okay.
They are best friends, so, like, work.
I love it.
Also, like, what a compliment. I, like, it might be a diss to him, but it's such a compliment to me.
I think he would see it as a compliment.
I feel like I could have my own cookbook, so that makes sense.
Yeah, and you wear the fanny pack, like, sideways around your shoulders like he does, and I think that it works.
Okay, so why did you decide to do it?
So, for the listeners, obstetrics is the delivering babies part, and gynecology is all of the female pelvic organs and, like, management of menopause and abnormal periods and endometriosis and stuff like that. So I did not always know that I wanted to be an OBGYN. I actually think that in the first 2 years of medical school, you could have caught me saying, I will never be an OBGYN. Ironic. And then it was my first rotation of my third year of medical school, which is when you start doing all of your clinical rotations. And I loved it. I loved it, loved it, loved it so much. But it was my first clinical experience. So I was like, I'm sure that I'm going to feel this way about all my clinical experiences. I'm just going to love them all. And then I started doing the rest of them. And I was like, no, they're not quite as cool. OBGYN is definitely the best. And I knew that I wanted to be a surgeon. And I knew that I wanted to be in the OR. So that eliminates a lot of specialties right there. And I knew that I liked babies, but didn't find out until I did my peds rotation that I don't actually want to be the one taking care of babies. So it was perfect. And then the more time I've spent in this specialty, the more I love it. And I have this passion for helping women that I didn't know that I had until after I spent more time in the field, which makes total sense because I grew up with YouTube crazy hoes and the rest of our sister cousins and all of our moms,
fabulous feminist females,
so many ladies, so much estrogen. So it makes sense that I have this passion for, like, helping women and wanting to help them, like, answer their questions and figure out their family planning goals and help them through their
and journeys. Tell them that their anxieties are all fine and that they're still queens and that freaking out does not mean that you are not a badass bitch.
Yes. And speaking of anxiety and being a badass bitch, about 99% of my patients will apologize at some point for something when they're in labor. And I tell each and every one of them that they are not allowed to say the word sorry when they're in labor. They can get away with just about anything. They have nothing to apologize for. They are bringing life into this world. So just as a side note, you are a badass bitches lady and do not say the word sorry when you're in labor.
Snaps for, like, all women just bringing in, like, miracles into the world all the time. We are literally so powerful, and that's why they have to keep us down. That's, like, it's so obvious when you just look at it that plainly.
You do not suppress something you're not afraid of.
Exactly. And
preach.
I truly believe, and this is something that I really am really, really grateful that you said, and I'm really glad that you said that, especially about delivering babies and, like, in your experience and stuff, but I really constantly try to untrain myself to apologize for things that I am only apologizing for because it's like, quote unquote, like not ladylike, or is something that like I have been culturally taught to apologize for. That's just actually something that I'm allowed to be okay with, is normal behavior, or is accepted in other social groups. It's like one of the things that I really try not to do is like, if I'm really sorry about something and it is something that's like, I should be making amends for something, that's fine. I can apologize. Or if I've been unintentionally rude or something like that and I realize later, fine. But like the whole like, one thing that like I notice all the time, and I've really stopped myself from doing this, is when I'm trying to pass someone like in a store aisle or whatever, and then I say, excuse me, you know, and then like they, you know, kind of move out of the way. I used to go like, oh, sorry, you know, like as I would pass them, and I was like, why am I apologizing to these people? Like, I didn't do anything wrong. I said, excuse me, they moved. All I have to do actually after that is maybe say thank you. But like, why am I apologizing? Like, why is that the like default for, especially for females, to apologize beforehand? To just be like, ugh, I'm in your way, I'm so sorry. And it's something that I've like really tried to get out of. And I'm so grateful that you're doing that for women who are like legitimately doing something nobody can do but women. Nobody would be here if it wasn't for that. And so I think it's a really pivotal moment for you to do that for them as they're bringing life into the world. That's so quiche. That is amazing. You're a badass bitch. You are the best OB I'm sure that's ever existed in the world. I like will not deliver a baby unless you are pulling it out of my veg. That is all.
Also, like, talk about a moment that like full circle here where we're talking about Miss Hammer or Dr. Potts being so like empowering and integral, and you probably being that for a lot of these women who've been saying that when they're like not. Aww. Like it's something you feel like you need to say to empower them, like because you're just like, yes, you are doing it, you are a badass bitch, and they might even full on reevaluate their whole life when they for saying sorry, like being like, yeah, I'm actually never even thought about that. I'm gonna stop apologizing for stuff that I'm supposed to be doing and that is amazing and that is difficult and incredible. So I think that you should keep that as your delivery room spiel.
I've never thought about it like that. That's pretty cool, actually.
And you're somebody's Dr. Potts. Okay, I have one more final question. Mm-hmm. And that is, can you please tell our amazing listeners the movie moment that you had on Monday night? Kelly has also not heard this one, so this will be news
breaking
to Kelly.
News.
Breaking news. Monday evening on a flight from St. Louis to Charlotte, Queen City. What happened?
So this is my first flight as a physician because I have not flown in over a year because of COVID. And so I'm like thinking about it at the gate. I was like, oh, if there's like a moment where they call for a doctor, like that's, I'm one of those. So I'm on the plane. I'm watching my cheesy rom-com on Netflix that I've downloaded on my phone. I've got my AirPods in and I hear little like, doctor, doctor, over the intercom. And I was like, oh my gosh. So I take out my AirPod and it's like, we have an emergency. If you're a nurse or a doctor, please come to the front of the plane. And I was like, ooh, okay. I do a little look-ski around the plane. There's only one other person standing up and she's like several rows ahead of me. So I was like, all right, I'm getting up. Here we go. And I,
oh my gosh, two women, let's go.
Yeah. And I get up. And I go up to the front of the plane and they're like, oh my gosh, you're a doctor. Cause it turns out like the other woman had gotten up was a nurse and they were clearly very surprised that me in my braid and my pullover, I was a doctor.
She looked like a teenager.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And anyway, and I was like, nope, I'm an actual doctor. And they were like, oh my gosh, real imposter syndrome. Anyway, a man had, passed out in the bathroom at the front of the plane.
And so we had to like take care of him and make sure that he had good vitals and make sure that he wasn't having a stroke or a seizure. And so we got him stabilized, and then with assistance, we got him back to his seat, and we were getting a lot of his history from his sister because he was autistic. And thankfully she was very helpful. I had to do a lot of improvising because I did not realize the limited medical equipment that is on a flight. So we did some improvising, but we took good care of him and we had him stabilized. And then I was on the, they put like the SATCOM phone, the one with like the big headphones that the pilot wears, on my head. And I was talking to the pilot and a ground doctor, like that they have on the ground on call. And they were like, "Doctor, do you want to emergency land this plane?" And I was like, "Oh my God, the power." And then I put on my best doctoring voice and I said, "No, the patient is stable. We do not need to land the plane. Over." Because I had to say "over" after everything I said, because he was saying it, so I said it. So it was really dramatic. It was like very Grey's Anatomy. And then I decide to write out everything that was happening, because I was going to hand it to this man's sister so that he could take it to the hospital with her, so that she didn't have to like remember all this crazy stuff that had happened. And as I'm writing out everything that was had happened, he became unresponsive again. And they were like, his sister was like, "Doctor, doctor." And I like turn over. I was like, "Oh my gosh." So I grabbed the nurse out of her seat and we have to like do it all again. And I got back on the SATCOM and I was like, "You need to have the EMTs meet us on this plane as soon as we're on the ground. This man needs to go to the emergency room." So thankfully I didn't have to do resuscitations or like chest compressions or anything, but we did have to stabilize him multiple times and it was pretty wild. And he's doing okay. I heard from his sister the following day, which was very sweet of her, that he's doing okay.
Wait, that's like, okay, first of all, like, what a, like, you truly lived not only in like a movie, but like an actual medical drama. Like, first of all. Second of all, the fact that like you were literally like, "Yes, doctor, over." Like, that was amazing to me. I don't know why, but I think that's really funny. And I like know that pilots talk like that, but like at the same time, it's also just kind of funny that it's like real, I guess. It seems like very cinematic to me. But that was really cool. Honestly, truly not surprised.
Megan's a real life superhero. It's now proven. Like, the world is on to her. She's going to have to get a Clark Kent disguise now.
Yeah. Just, like, wear your glasses or something when you get on planes from now on. That's, like, all he did to disguise himself. So, like, I guess.
She's going to have to come up with her, literally, her superhero name and her civilian name and, like, a backstory. And, like, I don't know who the evil villain is in her story, but, like, we're going to have to make her a cape. Good thing I can sew.
Yeah, for sure. There's a role for everyone in this tribe, and Megan is truly saving all of us if we get ourselves into dire straits.
Okay, well, thank you guys for listening this week to our sister episode, and we're so happy and blessed that we got to introduce you to our insane, fabulous, superhero, intelligent, badass bitch sister, Dr. Megan Monahan.
Tune in next time for a new and exciting combo between me and Elle. And also, we love you guys. Thank you so much for coming on, Megan. It has been truly an honor being your big sister. And I love you so much. So, 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 so.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I love you both to the moon and back. It has been truly wonderful. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Keep being hippies in the city.
If you love our podcast as much as we love you, please subscribe. Spotify, you can hit the follow button, and on Apple Podcasts, you can click the three dots on the right and click subscribe. Because numbers matter, people. We live in the Matrix. Also, if you'd like to support us so we can aim to run ad-free episodes, go to anchor.fm/l-army/support. That's anchor.fm/elle-army. support.com/SUPPORT. Peace and love.